All right. Good evening, everyone. We're studying Nehemiah again tonight. I'm glad everybody's here. Tonight's lesson is Volunteering to Walk by Faith. It's lesson 9. And here's where we are in the schedule of our classes. So this will be the last time I teach, and then Philip will finish up the class. And tonight we'll be covering chapters 11 and 12. And looking back at our goals of the class, kind of what we'll be covering tonight, is really be focusing more on, you know, seeing some of the good works that they did here with moving back into the city, and allowing that to kind of motivate us and stir us up. And then some of the teamwork aspects of that, how they supported each other, and then came together with the celebration of the ceremony of the wall dedication later. But that's just kind of a brief intro. We're not going to spend much time on the intro tonight. And if Dwight is on, I can't see everybody right now, but Dwight is on. Could you lead us in a prayer to get us started, Dwight?
Yeah. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we're just so thankful for this day. We're thankful for our willingness to study your word. As we go forth and study Nehemiah, with the fact that we glean from the lesson of being faithful and rebuilding and trusting in you in all things, and despite what's going on in the world, that we can always stay laser focused on you and be that example for others who are troubled of what's going on, and allow light shine and stay faithful to you always. Just be with Jack as he teaches this lesson, that you be with him and give him the knowledge that's needed to present the lesson, and be with us that are all partaking of this, that we may have our hearts and minds open and apply it to ourselves and allow us to build stronger in our faith. We ask this prayer in your son Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
And thank you, Dwight. So let's just get right into chapter 11. And Ronnie, I know you're on there. You mind reading verses 1 and 2 for us, Ronnie?
1 through what?
Just 1 and 2.
Okay, just 1 and 2.
Chapter 11, yes, sir.
Okay. Now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, but the rest of the people cast lots to bring one out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9/10 remained in the other cities. And the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem.
All right, thank you. All right, so chapter 11, we start out and we're seeing that the leaders of the people are living in Jerusalem, which makes total sense because that's the capital of the Jewish people. That's where the temple is. Everybody's coming in for worship, for sacrifices, for the commerce that goes on around the temple, for matters of law, you know, things like that. There has to be leadership there. There has to be the priests there. So it makes perfect sense that we see the leaders of the people living there now. But from what we can gather from Nehemiah and from other books, that was, you know, pretty much the extent of it. The rest of the town had not been occupied again yet fully. And remember, there's been over, you know, there's been the three waves of exiles that have returned over the past 90 years. And so from what we've studied in Nehemiah and some other books, Ezra and others, where are most of the people living at this point? Who can remember that? Well, they're living outside of Jerusalem in the towns, it says. In Ezra chapter 2, it says, you know, the people have come back, but they've kind of scattered around through the towns to their towns, it says. So I believe a lot of them went back to where they had their inheritance. You know, they're a lot of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin, who were going to be from around those towns anyway, their ancestors, their people. So a lot of them went back to the towns that they had originally come from, and they settled back there.
Kind of makes you wonder what the persecution was like, because they weren't afraid to leave the city. You'd think if they were being persecuted that they would have gone to the fortified city and built the wall up. But it almost feels like, hey, as long as you're poor and broke and living out in the country, we'll leave you alone. If you try and build that wall, that's a different story.
Yeah. They would have known that it's going to be a target.
Yeah.
Would not have been safe from the beginning without that wall there immediately. And you're right, that's where, and when we read Sanballat and Tobiah, they immediately were upset when anybody wanted to seek the welfare of the city.
Yeah.
So you put a target on your back if you're kind of moving into that area, for sure.
It's a little bit like a Christian. You keep your head low, don't let anybody know that you believe in God, and you're not going to take any incoming fire. And there's a little bit of an example there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Part of that whole, I think, and Philip, I think, came up with this title, this lesson, Volunteering to Walk by Faith. That's a lot of that built into that, how we're walking by faith does require that we show who we are. And some people aren't going to like that. And some people like Tobiah and Sanballat are going to give you a hard time about that, and others. So. Very good. So, and this is kind of what we're talking about now. Why wouldn't more of them have come? It was in shambles, for one. We know about the wall, but, from Nebuchadnezzar, the city was burned and there was rubble. The temple was rebuilt, but we don't have much knowledge of how well the rest of the city infrastructure was built up, and I just don't think it was built up well enough to really be an inviting place for people to just want to immediately move back into. We read it was shameful in chapter 1, even so, another mark against people wanting to immediately move back in. And there was the aspect of you have to eat. There was commerce there, we know of, because they were abusing that commerce by selling on the Sabbath. But I think a lot of that could have been just selling things that were needed for the temple service and sacrifices. But regardless, it would not have been as easy to provide food for yourself and your family living in the town. And cheating ahead into Philip's lesson a little bit, in 13 we see, when the people weren't really doing their duty per the law of providing for the priests and the Levites, well, the Levites got out of town and went back to the field so they could have something to eat. So there's the whole aspect of, if you're in town and you don't, you're not having food provided to you, you're not going to be able to sustain yourself in that town. So moving on, and so... We see the people start to come back in this verse 1 and 2. And, the question is, number one, like I was saying at the beginning, a lot of these people had probably come back to their land of inheritance, or at least in that area. And whenever this need had come up for people to start moving back into the city after the walls are there and that protection's there, you got to think that it would have been a pretty major sacrifice for the people to leave, not only for what Sam brought up and for, having a target, in other words, and, not having food, but that's their land. That's their towns, it says, their towns. And that's hard to just leave something like that you've grown to love and that was given to you by God, even possibly. And then further, here's what really came into my mind as I was thinking this. Before Nehemiah came to the city, these people were going about their business. Chapter 5 painted a lot of those these people in a bad light in the fact that they were taking advantage of each other, brother to brother. But they're God's people. And Nehemiah, touched their hearts with his rebuke and said, look, you can't be treating each other like that. He didn't just dismiss these people. These were God's people. And they turned from that. So these are good, godly people. And, you know, before Nehemiah came, they were just going about their business and had gotten into some bad habits. Well, now this casting of lots to move back into the city comes up. What do you think? These people weren't planning on moving here 3 months earlier. This wasn't on their radar. You know, Philip?
It seems like one of those situations where it's like, oh, I'm all for rebuilding Jerusalem. But I'm not moving in there. I mean, somebody else can move in. Like, I'm all for it. I totally support it. Except that if I move in, I'm gonna have to dip into my savings to buy more groceries. And you can't just expect me to be moving in. And so I love that. Like, to think about 52 days to rebuild the walls. I love the way you're phrasing that, because maybe what does God need from us, and what do we need to be willing to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the point I wanted to make on that is just be ready to see a good work that needs to be done. And, you know, even if it's not necessarily in your plans that you've written out on your, you know, life schedule, your journal, or however you do your goals, when an opportunity comes up and you see a good service for God that needs to be done, we have to be ready to consider that and do it if it's something that we can do. Different, even if it's different, one, it's just a good example for us, different than what they may have expected. Redeeming the time kept coming up to me, and I've listened to, some of y'all remember Marty's sermon on that from 5 years ago. And it's the same thing. He had points in there about preparing your lives ahead of time so that whenever a good work comes up, you know, this was going to be a good thing. We'll talk more about that in a minute, but this was going to be a good thing for the city, for people to start to be moving back. So what can you do in your lives to set things up to where you can take something on like this whenever the opportunity arises? And Philip mentioned that, you know, this could have been a hit to their pocketbooks because they're going to have to be supporting themselves in different ways than they were at their lands, at their towns. So getting your budgets in order, just getting purchasing power for whenever those opportunities do arise where you can engage in those.
Jay, let me ask you this. Could it possibly be because they call it the holy city that they didn't want to come back in because they didn't want to live that life or something?
That could have been, but, you know, just because it's the holy city, you know, there's all kind of unholiness going on in Jerusalem. So I don't think that, you know, maybe the priests were a little closer and you know, they might, but I don't think that's part of it, to be honest with you. I think because they could live that way no matter where they are.
I just wonder why they call it the holy city.
Well, just because that's where God's house is, you know. And so the temple's rebuilt at this point. So that's going to be where everybody's coming for all the feasts and sacrifices. And that's, that's the center for all of that.
Jack, one of the reasons why I was thinking, too, that they may be reluctant is because when you start something, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, like with the church, you know, when you have a small number, somebody's got to make communion. Somebody's got to lead. And so I'm just thinking about that could be part of it too. No one wants to take on that huge responsibility. And then on top of that, they still had all these enemies and defending against that, you know, and pressure from the outside. And so those were just some thoughts I had.
Yeah, that's great. It was going to be much harder than just staying in their own towns. Probably the first time they moved into Jerusalem, the houses were already set for them. Remember when they came into the land and everything was ready for them? It's not that way this time. This in shambles. They're rebuilding homes and restocking supplies and all that. So absolutely, it was going to be really hard for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I keep seeing throughout this whole book is it requires us to get out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times do we see them getting out of their comfort zone and doing things that aren't necessarily the easiest or the most pleasant, but it's something that they knew they needed to do. And I think as Christians, that's a huge requirement of us, is we have to be prepared to do things that may not be always comfortable, may not always be the easiest, but maybe for much more for our benefit than we realize. So I just keep seeing, get out of your comfort zone.
Were you possibly thinking of the perfumer building the wall?
Yeah, I mean, just all sorts of things that it's like, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have that's a great point. I mean, it's people seeing a need, and even though it may be hard, they're stepping up and doing what they can. Philip?
The thing, when I was going back through the chapter today, along the same lines, it just jumped out to me was verse 8 and 9, that there were like 928 people in one of the groups. And then it says, oh, and this is the guy that is their overseer in verse 9. And like, how would you like to be the overseer of 928 people? I mean, that's a big, big job. And it really struck me that, you can't force that many people. Like you can't force that many people to do anything. We can barely force ourselves to do the right thing most days. But like for to be an overseer in this city, the word overseer is used three different times in the chapter. And to think like, okay, there's another good work, go be an overseer. And I know that our elders must feel stretched really thin, especially right now. But imagine being an overseer over 928 people. It's just crazy.
928. Speaking on behalf of Sam and I decline.
Well, yeah, and let me maybe make a bit of a provocative.
Sam,
please understand that I say this and take it in the spirit that I mm-hmm. present it. If we think about our response to coming out from shelter in this COVID-19 environment. There are some people who shouldn't, absolutely should not come out yet. There are some people, though, that I wonder if we haven't just gotten comfortable in our environment and we maybe need to stretch ourselves a little bit. Take this in the spirit that is given. There's a real risk in this and we need to consider it. But we also need to consider if our reason for not doing it, I mean, I'm going to go to Target and Publix and the gas station, but I can't go to church. Well, then let's challenge ourselves a little bit on where is our comfort zone here. And when I get to church, there are people there who are nervous. Am I going to wear the mask? Am I going to make sure that I provide enough distance that people who would like to be there but have health problems would be comfortable in coming back? That's going to get us out of our comfort zone. But I think that's a fact. Masks are not comfortable. And yet, maybe that's what we need to do. So throw that out there for consideration.
Hey, Jack.
Ronnie.
I was thinking that, and this takes us a step back. I'm sorry for that. But back in chapter 5, these are the same people that Nehemiah rebuked for the things that they were doing then. And I don't think we mentioned this when we discussed that chapter. But at the very end of his rebuking, as a tone that's completely different from rebuking, but I think you realize he had touched their hearts. That twice, and this struck me when we were studying that night, he said, please let us leave off this usury. Please give back to them this very day their fields. I mean, he was pleading with them. See, I think he knew he had their heart, had been touched by that. And therefore, that paid dividends when you come to this chapter here where they're asking for volunteers to go to the city. And she just, I think those are connected. It just impressed me that he used that phrase, please, pleading with them to do the right thing. And maybe that was a beginning of their heart being changed.
Right. I mean, he had the strong rebuke in there, but then he with that please, and then he asked him, ought not you walk in the way that God wants you to walk?
I mean, I could see a father rebuking a son, and after he's really convinced him he's done the wrong thing, and he'd like to sort of duck his head, you know, then he says, please do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell throughout the whole story that he has the respect of the people.
Yes.
So they cast lots here in chapter 11, but the people went with a willing heart that were chosen. So he had that respect because he had, and I think that one of the keys is that he was truly trying to follow God's ways rather than his own, any kind of his own, ambitions or, what he felt was best. He just really, really tried to follow God's ways. And that's such a lesson for us and, you know, seeing how our leadership does the same thing. So thankful for that for sure. Thank you, Ronnie. I meant to talk about this slide a minute ago when we were looking at it, but as they're coming back in, you know, we read that they cast lots and the 1 in 10 was going to go in. And so this is not the shape doesn't match Jerusalem, how the walls were, but this is about the area. And so if you think about 50,000 people, that's just when that came back from with Zerubbabel roughly. So there's going to be more people in that area. Think about 1 in 10 being at least 5,000 people. That could fill that area pretty nicely. I know that the homes are probably a little more dense in Jerusalem than the suburbs here, but that could have filled the city pretty nicely, I think, and really been all that was needed. 1 in 10 seems a little thin when you just think about the numbers, but when you kind of look at what the area could be, it could probably fill it out pretty well. Let's see. Okay. Oh, one other thing I wanted to say about the casting of lots was a Proverb 18:18. And just some of the wisdom that could have been in casting the lots. You know, I don't necessarily get the mental picture of 100 people standing, you know, just shaking, hoping that they're not going to be the ones that's called. I think they did it because they knew everybody kind of had lives set up and, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't really know why they cast lots, to be honest with you, but they did. But Proverbs 18:18 says, the lot puts an end to quarrels and decides between powerful contenders. And the people would have respected the lot as God's choice. Because they, you know, with Thummim and all that stuff, it was a effective way to get people to do it and do it willingly. Oh, excuse me. So I wanted to talk about how the people blessed those who willingly offered to live in Jerusalem. The blessed, the best I can tell, that word is really just a verbal blessing. I mean, it could have been that they gave them money and, you know, like whenever the exiles were leaving, the foreign lands, they gave, you know, the kings, everybody gave them money and gold and all that. It very well could have been that people gave them stuff. I suspect that they would have, but certainly at least they gave them their commendation and they gave them their prayers and offered their, you know, just encouragement to these people that were going in, because it was a sacrifice and the people recognized that. So the focus of this class is volunteering to walk by faith. That's the title. And you can see that the people did have a level of faith to take this on, even though they were determined by Lot they still had to, you know, they could have, I'm sure, backed out, or probably would have been very, they would have been really frowned upon if you back out of something like that, I would suspect. But they still willingly went, it says in verse 2. I think Christy brought this up, but I wanted to just bring up an application there of there are many hard things that need to be done in the service of our Lord. And some of them just aren't really that glamorous. May not be your first preference. May not be what you might have thought you might be doing, but there's just a lot of things that have to be done. I know whenever we're doing the work for the deacons, you know, we're able to put our preferences 1, 2, 3, and, you know, and then we get what we get, and we do it, and we encourage each other in that. So, similar kind of thing there. But the people, they blessed them, those that went in there, and that's important because there are hard things that we have to do, and we need encouragement from each other. We need encouragement from God. You know, the people, like I said, would have, I think, recognized that who was chosen by the lot was, you know, God's hand in it. But in similar ways, we need encouragement from God too, to get these hard things that we need to get done. And he offers that through his people for sure. But I was thinking other forms of how we get encouragement are even our conscience. And you have to be careful of that because, you know, conscience can lead you down the wrong path too. But I think that when you really know God's word and that's what's written in your heart and your conscience is telling you to do something, you see something that needs to be done out there and, you know, something's tugging at your heart to go do it. Well, that could be a little encouragement from God just through the spirit, you know, that you have that word in your heart and that can lead you down those paths of doing things by faith. Also, it could be the elders directing you to do something, just like the deacon duties. But, you know, the elders ask people to do stuff from time to time, and that's a way of encouraging to and just like, I wish somebody would do that, and you just do it. That's kind of a negative form of this, but that is a way to be encouraged to do something, is just looking out and seeing what needs to be done and jumping in there and doing it. You may be upset that something hadn't been done, you know. Phil?
Well, and that's really in chapter 1, the neglect of the city is what got Nehemiah motivated in the first place. And it's just like, it's such a pressing need.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Glad you brought that up. Regardless of kind of how it comes about, you see a willing heart in this example of these people. It says a willingness. So that's just another great example for us. So, and we see here that you need the support of others, like I mentioned. I keep getting behind on the PowerPoint. And then that's just another, we've kind of talked about a little bit, but an application for us from today's lesson is just to be an encourager of others in the work, because some of the stuff is hard, as we've already established, so a little encouragement, you know, we know our, you know, we are but dust. You know, he knows our frame, that we are but dust. He knows we need some encouragement. That's what, you know, part of the reason that we have each other in the church for sure. And just blessing others. So the question is, and this is not necessarily to be discussed, but just to think to yourself, is when was the last time you blessed brother or sister? And I know there's a lot of cards going around and everything. That's always, you know, you hear that. But just think to yourself if you've done that lately, and if you hadn't, make it a point to do so, because it really can be effective. And then when was the last time? Go ahead. You said something?
Yeah, I just want to say this here. When you talk about blessing from somebody, there are some little kids that calls me just about every day and sing to me. And I tell you, that is a blessing. I don't know how nobody else feels about it, but it's a blessing to me that they call me and sing to me.
That encourages you, I'm sure.
It does. I mean,
well, even like when we wrap up these Zoom classes and people say, thanks, Jack, like, that's meaningful, because something that I've noticed after preaching to an empty building for a while is, you know, when someone would send a text and say, hey, I actually enjoyed the lesson. And I was just thinking Sunday night, like, how many people texted Sewell Sunday night? There he stood there in an empty building, 90 years old, and gave us a lesson. Did 3 people? Did 10 people? I mean, how many people really reached out to him to tell him? Because if we were all there together, everybody would pat you on the back and blah, blah, blah. And we know we don't do it for the accolades. But boy, like, Sewell should not have to preach on a Sunday night to an empty building and then drive home and not hear from anyone.
Yeah, thank you for that. I honestly hadn't even thought of that. So I can imagine that it feels a little bit weird to just be done with your sermon and, okay, I guess I'm going to walk out now. Florine?
I brought this same thing up about when we were having the classes every night. There's some people come out and you see their pictures and nobody said a word to them and they get off. And I just thought about, well, I know they come to hear the class, but still they needed somebody to say hello to them. You know, I thought about that too.
Well, people will take that as your hello to everybody. Right now.
I try to say hello to everybody.
Hi, Glory.
I missed who that was. It sounded like Clayton.
No, that was Sam.
Oh, that was Sam. I'm sorry. when was the last time you received a blessing? And Philip mentioned how helpful that can be. And absolutely. It's not why we do things. For sure, you know, we're even told in some cases to, you know, keep what you do quiet. But you know, it's all going to come at one point. We hear about the
person. It told the person that done it made it keep quiet, but it didn't tell us to keep quiet. You see what I'm saying? The person that, like, if I do something, I don't go out and brag about it. But it's not telling somebody if they can't tell me how much they appreciate it or something like that.
That's right. That's right. So. But I already said this point, but this is another way of just encouraging is just being ready to support others. A lot of the end of chapter 10, we didn't really get time to read all that, but a lot of the end of chapter 10 was how they had neglected on all their financial support for the temple service and the priests and Levites. And I already referenced 13 where they didn't get that support and they had to flee to the field. So that's just another way that we're sharing the work and encourage is with our finances when people need help, when, you know, supporting preaching here and abroad and all that good stuff. Okay, so we've gotten done with verses 1 and 2.
Did you say you're going to go all the way through 12?
Yes.
I don't think you're going to make it to that.
Well, there's a lot in those 2 verses. And then we're not going to read all this, but the rest of chapter 11, there's Philip brought up a good point about just a good example of, you know, how hard leadership could have been maybe for 928 people. But the rest is it's a list of the chief of the province that lived in Jerusalem. So it's really a kind of a census. So it's a record keeping. And there's this basically identical list in First Chronicles where there's in that section of that book where it goes through a lot of different genealogies. So that's in there. And this is just a little bit different, but it's essentially the same list. And here's basically what we see there. We're not going to take the time to read that because there's a lot of names in there that are hard to say anyway. but sons of Judah and sons of Benjamin, who you would expect, you know, being that this is their region, the land that was allotted to them, the priests, the Levites, and the gatekeepers, everybody necessary for the temple service work. That's basically who was living there at that point before all the 1 in 10 moved in. Philip?
Well, it's just interesting how often Nehemiah prays to God and says, remember me, or remember me for the good that I've done. And when Nehemiah does put these long lists of names, it shows that as a leader, he remembered other people. He mm-hmm. knew them by name. He knew who was over different groups. Like he took the time to learn their names and to write their names down and to remember their names. So he wasn't asking of God anything that he hadn't also done. And I'm impressed by that. That's a lot of names for Nehemiah to keep up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Okay, and then in verses 25 through 36, we have here, this is the towns that were outside of Jerusalem that we've been talking about. It's a list of the towns. I think there's a few more towns mentioned in the people that had built the wall, where they're coming from, but this is just another record here. Look, this is more for record keeping here. Again, I think to Philip's point, he's mentioning where people are coming from and including that in the record. In chapter 12, more record keeping here is what we'll see, along with a description of the ceremony for the wall dedication. It was a major, major ceremony that together for the wall ceremony. And then here's an outline of chapter 12, because we don't have time to read it all. So I thought an outline would be better. Names of the chief priests and Levites that came up with Zerubbabel in 1 through 9, more lists, then more, you know, kind of a recounting of the succession of the high priest there, a couple verses, more high priests, the different generations that were coming there. Levites, there's about 15 verses dedicated to the 16 verses to the wall ceremony. And then just about how the different offices were working in the temple at the end. Let's see if we have time. I wanted to read. Yeah, we have time. Let's see. Who can read? Well, I can't see everybody's face here, but can somebody read verses 27 through 43 of chapter 12, please?
I'll read it.
Okay.
Now, the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgiving and singing, with cymbals and stringed instruments and harps. And the sons of the singers gathered together from the countryside around Jerusalem, from the villages of the Netophathites, from the house of Gilgal, and from the fields of Geba and Asmaveth, for the singers had built themselves villages all around Jerusalem. Then the priests and the Levites purified themselves and purified the people, the gates, and the wall. So I brought the leaders of Judah up on the wall and appointed two large thanksgiving choirs. One went to the right hand on the wall toward the refuse gate. After them went Hoshea and half of the leaders of Judah, Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, Jeremiah, and some of the priest's sons with trumpets. Zechariah, the son of Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micah, the son of Zachary, the son of Asaph, and his brethren, Shimei, Azrael, Milalai, Gilalai, Mai, Nethanel, Judah, and Hanani, with the musical instruments of David, the man of God. And Ezra the scribe went before them. By the fountain gate in front of them, they went up the stairs of the city of David on the stairway of the wall, beyond the house of David, as far as the water gate eastward. The other thanksgiving choir went the opposite way, and I was behind them with half of the people on the wall, going past the Tower of the Ovens as far as the broad wall, and above the gate of Ephraim, above the old gate, above the fish gate, the Tower of Hananel, the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the sheep gate, and they stopped by the gate of the prison. So So the two Thanksgiving choirs stood in the house of God, likewise I and the half of the rulers with me, and the priests, Eliakim, Maaseiah, Benjamin, Micaiah, Elioenai, Zechariah, and Hananiah with trumpets. Also Maaseiah, Shemaiah, Eleazar, Uzi, Jehonan, Malchai, Elam, and Ezer. The singers sang loudly with Jezrahiah, the director. Also that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The women and the children also rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard afar off.
Thank you. And with that, you can see just how great of a ceremony this was. And I got to thinking in studying this section, our class, you know, the people were just so happy, but our class has actually taken longer than it took them to actually build the wall. But now we see such a great celebration of them doing that. And one of the points I wanted to make was in verse 31, Nehemiah has not lost sight of God here in this celebration. This Thanksgiving choirs is what Sam's translation says. Mine just says choirs that gave thanks, but they're still just so thankful to God. They haven't lost sight of it was by His hand that this was accomplished. They had many obstacles, outside oppressions, you know, the internal strife, just the complexity of building a wall. So it was a great time here that they were able to celebrate this. Well, so the application there that to come up with is just a application from this is just us not forgetting to have times of Thanksgiving in a more, you know, public way. Perhaps we always are asked, you know, to give thanks to God in prayer, but sometimes, you know, the situation calls for maybe a celebration. I'm not saying you have to go get two choirs and do it that way, but it's nice to see them having such a celebration for a good thing that was accomplished in the service. Phil?
Just something else to be aware of in this particular part of the book, the fact that Ezra is obviously here in the city with Nehemiah. There's it's kind of an academic trend to deny that Ezra and Nehemiah ever even overlapped. And I just want the whole class to be aware that's an either or option. Like either the Bible is true or, you know, or the like you can't have it both ways. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Obviously, Ezra is there and he is with Nehemiah and they are walking around the wall together. And so some of the scholarly attempts to separate them would be inconsistent with scripture.
All right, thanks for bringing that up. Florian, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder how many times we think about, you know, there's a song said, give me, Lord, give me some soul today. Then we think about how blessed it is that we see people that we are able to talk to and try to bring them to the Lord. That's a blessing when you be able to find somebody that you can talk to. It's a blessing that we're even able to know how to do it, you know, and able to be a Christian ourselves.
So yeah.
To me, I always think about that song about, Lord, lead me to some soul today.
So, Jack, I think it's so important to see the celebration that we see here, but we've seen it before. How many times they're celebrating, how many times they're rejoicing. And like you said, it's coming back to God, but they're excited about what they've accomplished. They're excited about what they have been able to do as a group together. And I think that's so important for us to be mindful of, that it's okay to be excited. It's okay to get to have the joyousness when there's something like this. Or, you know, when we see those that are baptized, it's okay to be excited. You know, that's such a joyous occasion. And I think when we see things like this, where they went all out and had choirs and they're just singing, like, they're good for them, because we need those examples and reminders that, yes, be joyous and excited and happy when things like this happen.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, the joy of Jerusalem was heard far away, it says in that last verse there, 43. Let's see.
Jack. Ronnie.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Okay, I'm sorry. This sounds like a note. I have a note in my Bible in the margin right here in this section, and I don't. The only credit I get for the note is I wrote it, but I don't know who made the point. And it sounds like Philip, maybe, but it says the point is carefully planned, meaningful celebrations, and that just sounds like Philip, a note he would make. I don't know who presented a lesson on Nehemiah. It looks like an overview, maybe, lesson based on this note. Okay, that's it.
Well, there is, it was definitely planned out. And I don't know when, it's hard to kind of for me to figure out when this happened, but it was, I think, sometime after the wall was built. Because I know going down into 13, you start to see references to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes and then the beginning of the book of the 20th year. So it's been 12 years that pass between chapter 1 and chapter 13. Where this falls in that 12 years, I'm not sure. But it would definitely require some planning because of all the choirs and the sacrifices and just bringing the people in and the officials and Ezra. And, you know, it was well thought out for sure. And it was, you know, to get into some of the details, you think about the choirs, and I'm not even close to an expert on this. But it was interesting how even that was kind of done well planned out. It was even certain people that were probably from the family that were appointed originally by David. And, you know, it was kind of done in a way, it was very structured, the singing and all that, because David had appointed singers back in the day. I think you follow the same patterns here, Philip.
Well, back in chapter 11, verse 23, it said there was a commandment from the king concerning them and a firm regulation for the song leaders day by day. I mean, they really took it seriously. Yeah. And it's a great example for our song leaders. Like, we should be so appreciative of the energy and the effort they put into choosing songs that go together, songs that motivate us, songs that prepare our minds for different parts of the worship. And like, they really did not slack off. And you see that coming through in chapter 12. I wouldn't want to be in charge of that. That'd be a huge project to get everyone to sing those songs marching around the whole city there. Think about that satellite picture you put up of the neighborhood there around the church building. Can you imagine organizing a couple thousand people to march around that neighborhood and to be singing and to have specific songs chosen that were fitting for the occasion? It's really impressive.
All right. Thank you. I think I'm running out of time here. So, and we're basically done, but I just wanted to say in verses, the last few verses of the chapter, we're still seeing examples of them providing services according to the law, still continuing with that good example of following God's law and service to the temple. And then a more generosity from Nehemiah. How he gave the daily portions for the singers and gatekeepers, whether that was out of his own pocket or he just led in making sure that happened. It's, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but he's generous. He made sure that they were taken care of like a good leader should have. So any final comments before we end? And Philip?
On that point of generosity, my Bible had a footnote that Josephus says for here in chapters 11 and 12 that Nehemiah may have paid out of his own expense for some of those houses to be prepared when the 1 out of 10 moved into the city. So just imagine like that you went in and helped furnish someone's apartment and you don't even know who's going to live there, but you furnished it because you want somebody to come in and be part. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for participation tonight.